Prologue. Suffocated by car fumes, the old oak tree on the embankment by the footbridge over King Offa Way groaned under the weight of three teenage boys trying to make themselves comfortable. The boys hoped to capture death footage from one of the Juliet balconies of the nursing home adjacent to their tree. The building was one of many nursing homes on Hastings Road, a road of two halves, now bisected by the King Offa Way bypass, built before the kids were born. The kids were attempting to film someone's demise and post it to their website, deathrow.uk, a euphemism for the elephant's graveyard that to them was Bexhill. Although the town wasn't without its unsavory elements, some of whom should have been on a real death row, it wasn't the worst place to live, at least not as bad as the bored young locals made it out to be, and was as good a place to come and die as any other. Like most teenagers, the tree huggers suffered from boredom and would have preferred to live closer to the bright lights of London, which wasn't far away, but took an age on the train when it worked. Still, at least they weren't sitting in front of PlayStations all day killing zombies, although one of them would have sooner done that than be up a tree. But at least he was in the fresh air for a change, next to a dual carriageway, keeping in touch with nature, with his iPhone poised to take a picture of someone dying. "Seriously, Carl, we can only see into one room, and he's sitting in bed eating a steak and kidney pie," Mike said. "How do you know it's steak and kidney?" Freddy asked. "Fuck off, you dick. It's a fucking pie. Whatever it is, he's not about to peg it. It was a stupid idea. We can't see anything anyway, and I'm not sitting here all day. We'd be better off down the seafront waiting for someone to have a stroke," Mike complained. "Anyway, do we really want to see someone die, Carl?" "Seriously? The website is shit. No one ever visits it." Mike looked at the slope falling away beneath his feet, planning his drop from the tree and going home. The kids were nearly 15 years old. The 89-year-old they were filming heard them arguing and turned to see the last boy dropping from the tree a few yards from his window before shrugging his bony old shoulders and returning to the delicious steak and kidney pie, remembering when he used to climb trees. It seemed like yesterday. Mike was a gangly six-footer who only wore white shell suits, which he thought were retro cool. He would look back with embarrassment in later years at his fashion sense, but retro was a big thing when he was young. Despite his fashion sense and bad acne, Mike did well with the ladies, schoolgirls mainly, and one or two of their mums, swapping girlfriends frequently, somehow avoiding tears. Tall and dark, his admirers filled in the rest as innate confidence minus confidence's arrogant side effects and a lack of concern for others' opinions of him meant he was never troubled by self-doubt. Carl was clever, an ideas man, intellectually gifted, switched on in a world-savvy way, and wore a hat. And then there was Freddy. When left to his own devices, Freddy watched internet porn or played video games. The others weren't averse to a bit of porn now and then, but could take it or leave it. Concerned by his friend's irritability and shortening temper, Carl watched a YouTube video once about porn. The online lecture informed him that mirror neurons in the brain could enslave individuals, making them seek even more grotesque images. The subject, Freddy, gained relief when dopamine was released into the brain, a chemical that acted as a reward. The lecture explained how the person became desensitized to the chemical, requiring more and more exposure to the stimulus to increase dopamine, creating an addiction. The video concluded with images of MRI scans of porn-obsessed brains, noting they were smaller than average. Unfortunately, none of Freddy's acquaintances would be surprised at the revelation his brain was smaller than it should be. Although Carl was no psychologist, he'd seen enough TED Ed videos, leading him to believe he understood his friend's condition. Porn had fucked with the wiring in Freddy's undersized brain. It was a rational hypothesis, but only partially correct because, sadly, other factors worked against Freddy, factors Carl would never know about. Historically, Freddy had been agreeable to anything Carl suggested, which helped keep Carl's hands clean. Not that Carl was a heinous supervillain, he was just naturally cautious, dreaming up websites and other schemes, all saved under Freddy's name, using Freddy's computer and email addresses. But Carl had noticed that Freddy was becoming rebellious and unpredictable as the friends drifted apart, brought back together recently thanks to Carl's latest morbid but short-lived enterprise, which had briefly seemed like a good idea. Boredom kept Carl's mind looking for new initiatives, while the other two drifted behind like passengers in his wake. But Carl realized the trio's interests were diverging. Moreover, upcoming events would show their differences were even starker. His latest venture had been their first get-together outside of school, WhatsApp, and Facebook for a while, and Carl sensed resentment brewing. If not for meeting Carl on their first day of secondary school, Mike and Freddy would probably have spent the last 3 years in bed all day, in Freddy's case with a laptop and endless boxes of tissues, or worse. Maybe Carl used them to some extent, but it was their choice, and until recently, they had been willing participants and shared many good times because of it. But memories can be very short. Tumbling down the embankment and nearly ending up on the busy road, the three boys laughed blithely, ignorant to danger, the grassy verge staining Mike's shell suit, green and brown. He didn't care. It had been the first time they had laughed together in ages. Mike and Carl looked at each other in bonhomie when Freddy began shouting and waving over the traffic's din. "Look! Up there!" he yelled, pointing at the bridge. "There must be 200 cats!" The other two looked up to see numerous cats' heads pushing through the bridge's railings, staring at the sky, oblivious to the boys. "Fuck, man! Are they hypnotized? Look for cameras. It could be like some Derren Brown shit." Freddy's observations were cut short by the cat's sudden synchronous jolt from docility into a tense state of alert. The animals' heads had stopped looking up and began moving down towards the boys as the simultaneous contractions from thousands of muscles sent a hum through the aluminium bridge. Consumed by the spectacle, the boys hadn't noticed how eerily silent the world had become as lights held traffic at a distant end of the road. Life felt freeze-framed, except for the cat falling from the sky and the explosion of movement as the cat's shoulders crashed into the metal uprights and heads clattered through the bars as if the cats attempted harakiri. Then, as bodies piled into tightly packed columns, oblivious to pain, the bridge clanged like a bell as the boys leapt back a step, shocked. The sight of cats piled one on top of another with their heads pushed through 80 feet of railings, bodies stacked 7 deep in some places like multicolored furry-faced totem poles as the cats watched an object drop from the sky, mesmerized the boys and the arriving car drivers until a body hit the road. The speed camera on the opposite side of the road seemed to encourage the drivers to race each other on the boys' side, mocking the speed limit, their attention returning to the road as one of the cats fell in front of them, sending the melee of cars, all travelling too fast, careening beneath the bridge as the drivers sawed at their steering wheels with ivory knuckles. The cats hurriedly withdrew from the bars to restack on the other side of the bridge as the thing they had tracked from the sky was taken by the cars underneath them. "Fuck me, Freddy!" Carl shouted, smiling in disbelief, staring at Freddy. "I got the whole thing!" Upon Freddy's outburst, in the perfect location, Carl had instinctively turned his iPhone's camera on, capturing the cats staring at the sky. But although the footage caught some excellent close-ups of the cats charging the railings, their facial expressions, the gruesome aftermath, and finally, the cats beginning to leave for home disconsolately, confused and needing a belly rub. The cat in the road's cause of death would remain a mystery because the action had all happened so fast. Absorbed by the chaos of his phone screen as he filmed, Carl was only vaguely aware of an object landing on the road as he ran towards the action, lucky not to be killed by cars swerving all over the road. Heading under the bridge as he filmed the cats pulling their heads from the railings, he sprinted to the other side, emerging to discover the fallen thing was a mangled cat. Awestruck by the image of cats on the bridge, no one, including Carl, had suspected that the cat in the road had fallen over 3,000 feet. The camera's lens had never angled above the faces of the cats on the bridge to reveal the truth, so Carl, the boys, and the car drivers trying desperately to avoid crashing assumed the cat had fallen from the bridge. As the tailback cleared and the clacking magpies moved in behind them, the boys climbed impatiently up the bank, desperate to get back to Freddy's house to watch the film on a big screen for forensic examination. Despite noticing the cats gathering on the bridge on its ascent, the bird had ignored them. Having released its victim and using the cat's slipstream to dive, it landed effortlessly on its usual perch, the bridge's handrail, to survey the scene unnoticed amidst the chaos and confusion. Basking in the madness of its making, the bird's entertainment was interrupted by the familiar pops from a Domino's delivery scooter threading through the cars beneath it, reminding him of his hunger. Leaving his perch to pursue the bike when it emerged, with the imaginary scent of barbecue sauce tickling its senses, the seagull wasn't noticed coming or going.